You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Wednesday, so it's time for Wayne on Wednesday. Wayne McCurry is a portfolio manager at FNB Wealth and Investment in Johannesburg. A results season is upon us, Wayne. Have you seen anything that has reinforced your position on the cheapness and attractiveness of the South Africa incorporated stocks?
Well, look, I mean, when companies do come out with results, obviously I look at them individually.
Yes.
But I look more at the absolute valuation of the share. Rather than, you know, focusing on a particular sector like SA shares in that.
Yeah.
But I must admit they are looking cheaper. So, I mean, only time will tell with how they come out. But I mean, like like what's out today is Rhodes Food Group.
Yes.
Okay. Now Rhodes Food Group aren't really into bulk commodity type of foods. They add a lot of value. They got a lot of value added, products that they come up, and their headline earnings are up 37%. So in other words, they've escaped the problems that Tiger Foods has got and Astral Foods has got, you know, that they're sort of, let's call it the raw commodity food producers, because they're adding value. So earnings are up 36%, which is really good for Rhodes Food Group.
Yes.
And at a 6 price earnings ratio. 6.
Yeah, I'm no expert in the food business, but that seems to me very, very low for a food producer. And
yeah.
Also, the thing about Rhodes is, doesn't it make food for companies like Woolies as well? Woolies Label Foods.
Yes, no, that's what it does. It doesn't make Mealy Meal and Samp and Beans. Tigers does that.
Yeah.
They actually make the pre-packages for lots of guys. For Woolworths, Checkers, they do a whole range. They got, so in other words, they've got fairly high value add product,
mm-hmm.
and I think their product's good, but the share price has gone from, you know, from 20 rand 5 years ago to 8 rand, 9 rand now, mm-hmm. 9 rand 70, 8 rand 75 now, and it's a 6 price earnings ratio with a 6% dividend yield. So normally a 6 price earnings ratio is reserved for companies in dire straits, you know, that are showing, you know, their products reaching the end of its lifespan, or they've hit huge problems. You know, it's not reserved for a company like Rhodes Food Group. You know, Rhodes Food Group should be a 10 price earnings ratio, for argument's sake.
Yes.
You know, the good quality retailers are 18-20 price earnings ratio. This is a 6.
So it's on your radar, or are you accumulating now?
And unfortunately, it's a small company. We can't really we can't really accumulate for our clients in any meaningful degree, because simply of its size, it's a 2 billion market cap. But you know, very competent management. I certainly can't recall RFG ever coming out with a major problem, you know, where that something went dramatically wrong with them. So, yeah. So once again, you know, it is just cheap, and you know, and but you know, it can stay cheap for a long time. I mean, who knows? It can actually stay cheap for a very long time. But you are actually buying, you know, true good underlying value in a good company that's got, you know, reasonable prospects, nice products. It actually looks very reasonable value, to be honest.
So for a retail investor, not for a large institution, no, RFG might be something to consider.
I think so.
Hmm. Okay. Hmm. Another one that came out today was Nampak. I mean, I looked at my screen. Suddenly, this share price is up 12%.
Yes.
Now, this is a very, very volatile stock, which has been hammered over the years.
Hammered.
Yeah, it really has been. I mean, again, you're talking about market caps. It's a pale shadow of the Nampak that you knew when you first started in the business, I would have thought. Yeah.
I mean, Shapira and I actually discussed this the other day, and we said we're old enough to remember when Nampak was a blue chip.
Mm.
So even though the share price has jumped 15% today, it's still down 96% on a 5-year basis.
Gosh.
Now, here's a classic example, okay?
Yeah.
Here's a classic example of a company that's, for want of a better word, has lost its way. Now, whether that's the company's fault or the environment's fault or the market's fault or the SA consumer's fault or imports and dumping, who knows, glass, whatever packaging that's coming from overseas and the substitution of local products. So what, for whatever reason, this company's lost its way. And it's gone through massive restructuring, and it shows, it has showed huge losses and huge write-offs, and you know, you name it. Other than it being a Steinhoff, this is about as bad as what it gets for a listed company. And you know, this is on a 3 price earnings ratio, and Rhodes Foods Group is a 6. You know, so there's a mispricing with Rhodes. I mean, on Nampak, okay, this is only a 400 million rand company. I mean, it's nothing. I mean, it's a, as you said, it's a shadow of a shadow of a shadow of its former self. It may be worth a punt, but then it's just option money.
Again, 400 million is not enough for the institution work for. You couldn't look at it.
You can't. No, that's way too small. No, I mean, it's old Shapiro. Shapiro could buy the whole company, yeah, man.
I was thinking you could actually buy the whole company, but if
No. I'm not in the same scale as Shapiro. Yeah. We're not in the same scale. But if you look, I mean, Nampak's will probably be very interesting for someone starting out new in the investment field to go and study what has gone wrong here. You know, go back 20 years. And look at Nampak, and then, you know, have a look at where it went wrong. What were they subject to? What were all the problems that that they had that's caused it to become, quite frankly, a failure?
Yeah, so it's one for the students and say, okay, great South African company, used to be a blue chip. Shapiro and McCurry used to trade it when it was worth billions and billions, and that was in old money as well, not before the rand was debased so much. And yeah, and say, what happened?
I'm just having a look here. I've just called up the long-term price chart. Yes. Nampak's been listed since 1970, and the share price hit a peak in 2015. I'm just trying to pick it up here, of 40 rand, and it's now worth 66 cents.
Gosh, that's a disaster.
So when you look at Nampak, and I'm looking at Nampak now relative to the JSE, it outperformed the JSE by 300% between 1970 and 1999. So it did 200%. It did twice as well as the JSE. Mm-hmm. Up until 1999, and then it has underperformed by 98% against the JSE in the subsequent years.
So something happened, as you quite rightly say, either the market changed or they just didn't keep up with the competition. It's a packaging company. I mean, they should be doing well, I would have thought, because everything that I pick up through my postbox or delivered to me is packaged.
Yeah. It's in packaging. But, you know, in the 90s, I think there were 3 packaging companies listed, Nampak, Kohler, and I think Consol.
And what have we got
now?
Yeah,
but you listed, I mean.
Impact.
And we've got Nampak, I think. We've got Impact, Nampak, and Astropak, I think.
All right. Well, anyway, it's not one to look at, but, you know, well done to anyone that bought it recently, because as you say, it's up, I don't know, 12, 15%, whatever it is. Let's look at that. What did your screen give you for the all share? Because my screen keeps on changing. It's being very erratic this afternoon. I've got down one.
Yeah, it's down quite a bit.
Yeah, down 1.3%, something like that. And that.
Yeah, 1.3%, about, yeah.
And that follows up on yesterday's move as well. It was a big one yesterday, too, to the downside. What is it? What's driving it
lower? And the one's falling. Look, yesterday was quite clear what was driving it lower at Richemont fell.
Yeah.
And Richemont has gone up so much and it's so massive. So yesterday was Richemont and to a far lesser extent, Naspers and Prosus. But today the mining shares are falling strongly. Thungela, Kumba, BHP, Anglo, and Richemont's coming down. And then surprisingly enough, the shares on the upside are South African shares, Shoprite,
Pick and Pay,
Dis-Chem, Vodacom, Life Healthcare, Aspen. So the South African shares are going up, not by much, but you know, it's quite different. And of course, the financials are only slightly down. They're down 0.5%. So today it's once again the industrials. The industrials and the mining shares.
Well, that's a good sign.
I think it's just uncertainty. I think it's just pure uncertainty. You know, the markets have run reasonably hard over the last little while, both locally and globally. And I think people are using this debt ceiling thing as a bit of an excuse, I think, just to take a little bit of profits, to be honest.
Well, I tell you what, if the market does fall because of the debt ceiling thing, as you put it, I think you should load up, because every time we've had a debt ceiling problem, just at the last minute, lo and behold, what a relief.
There's a resolution.
They come to some deal.
I heard an interesting thing on TV this morning. I was watching one of the financial programs, and I thought this whole debt ceiling thing only happened once every 5 or 6 years, because that's the only time it hits the headlines. But now, I might be wrong, but this is exactly what the commentator said. And he said, you know, since the Kennedy years, they've hit this debt ceiling 78 times. And this will be the 79th. I didn't know that. I mean, I must actually investigate it, because I thought every time they increase the debt ceiling, they give themselves a breathing space for a couple of years until they hit it again.
No, they spend a lot in the States. They are fiscal reprobates, I would say. And I don't even know why they have a debt ceiling. Why don't they just say, listen, let's just spend. We've got the printing press.
They got the printing press and they got the dollar. Lots of countries have got printing presses, but lots haven't got the dollar.
Right.
So they are extremely fortunate to have the dollar as their currency, because then you can print. Now, just that's actually a very interesting subject. I mean, US debt has gone absolutely through the roof, like you cannot believe, but it was entirely affordable when your long bond rate was 0.3%. So in other words, their interest charge that they paid each year on interest didn't go up nearly the same extent as what their debt's gone up by, because their debt used to cost them 4%. You know, then all of a sudden it cost them less than 1% for 10 years. And so to me, that's the next global crisis. It's actually a government debt crisis, because it's very, very easy. Let me just call it up here. It's very easy to finance at less than 1%. But when that goes up to, let's call it the 3.5-4% where it is now, you don't feel the pinch immediately, because your debt rolls. You know, it's 10-year debt, 15-year debt, 20-year debt. So you only got to pay the new interest rate at a later stage. But I would think the average debt duration in America is, let's just say it's 10 years. But in 10 years' time, your cost of debt, and this is assuming no increase in debt, and of course there will be an increase in debt, your cost of debt will double. Your cost will more than double interest. So I think this is truly the next crisis. We're not facing it next year or the year after, but in the next two decades, the world's going to be facing a true crisis, and the crisis is government debt. Now, you know, as we all know about inflation worldwide and how inflation's at 40-year highs in America, so let's just talk America. Normally, an interest rate shot up through the roof. Normally, that would have triggered a massive recession. All it's triggered is a slowdown, because there was, after the global financial crisis in 2008, people were scared of debt. Consumers and companies were scared of debt. So when this new inflation and high interest rate crisis hit, there wasn't a debt bubble that burst. And the banks were low on debt. Because, I mean, the global financial crisis was the banking crisis. So the legislation changed and the appetite for risk also changed. So we sailed through this period of 40-year high inflation and the steepest increase in interest rates we've ever seen, off a very low base, but it's still nevertheless the steepest increase in interest rates the U.S. has ever seen. And the economy is slowing down. It's not; it might not even go into a mild recession. It might just slow down. And as I said, the reason why we did that is there wasn't debt in the system. But that's not entirely true. There's massive debt in the system, and that's government debt. It's just that government don't pay the new interest rate immediately. They pay the new interest rate spread over a number of years.
Yes, when these things but come to maturity.
Crisis,
when
they come to maturity and they roll to maturity.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing is, before we get on to other
subjects.
And, of course,
any new debt they take on as well. Any new debt. So they, each year, the new deficit. So the next crisis, and I will probably, hopefully I'll still be around, but I probably won't be around in financial markets when this happens. But you know, you wouldn't want to touch a government bond under that scenario. And the economies would actually go into a bit of a recession, because government will just have to tax more and spend less to afford that high debt at, you know, a more appropriate interest rate. Because debt cost you, you know, debt was nothing when, well, I'm just looking at the chart here. From 2015, the cost of debt in America has been, on average, call it 2%.
I remember,
and the low it got to, was 1.1.
I remember, Wayne,
and
when
now
the
it's 4.
US 10-year was 0.65%, something like that, on the screen.
Yeah.
And you look at this screen now, it's 3.72%, something
yeah,
like
it's
that.
Three.
And it's
yes.
of my it's my firm opinion that we don't, there's a lot of skeletons rattling around in a lot of cupboards, whether it be a corporate cupboard or a government cupboard, that will come out because people don't yet understand what 0.6 to 4%, let's call it, really
yes.
means. And things are going to happen.
Yeah.
And just like you said, in not this year or next year, but in 10 years' time and in 20 years'
no,
time,
it's
going to come out of the woodwork.
Definitively will. Mm. Yeah. And there's another long-term implication of this, which I should actually discuss more often and think about it more often.
Yeah.
We've had an equity bull market since the early 80s. And two things drive equity. One is the cost of capital, which is essentially the long bond rate, and the other one's earnings.
Yeah.
Okay. But now the long bond rate since 82 in America has gone from 15% down to 0.6 and now back up to 4.
Okay.
So in other words, probably 50% of the equity returns we've seen since the 80s came from the long bond coming down. Now, that's finished. That's gone. I'm not saying it's going back up to 50, not by any country mile, but the continuous decline in that long bond rate for the last 40 years is over. So in other words, the next 40 years or the next 10 years, we must severely curtail our equity return expectations, specifically out of America, but most Europe, let's call it most first world Western countries, whatever you want to call it, show a similar trend. So we must think, if equity gave you, I don't know, 10% return on average for the last 40 years, the next 40 or the next 10 or the next 20 is probably only going to be 5, eh? Going to be a lot lower.
Okay, well, you're going to have to explain that
this
to people.
This is a big structural change.
Yeah, when you've got a 7% inflation rate, or 6.8% as came out CPI
today. That will disappear. That will disappear. Interest rates sort out inflation. You don't know how long it takes to sort it out, but interest rates sort out inflation in America.
Well, that's something to watch out for.
Out.
Yeah, you should write a piece on it, or we should discuss it more often. Now, Wayne, you spoke about Rhodes Food, and we always speak about food on this show, so I want to talk about something. But it's got a sort of a slight economic angle to it, because I want to know about how much food costs in South Africa. Okay, on Friday, I went to Amsterdam. It's not my favourite place in the world. It's beautiful. I will give it that. I mean, architecturally beautiful, and it's got incredible museums and galleries and all that sort of stuff, and lovely brown bars and things. But I find it very confusing and very crowded. I was there on Friday night, and it was a rare sunny evening in the Netherlands, and the place was absolutely chock-a-block full of tourists spilling
yes.
out onto the streets, all drinking beer and having a good time, which when I was in my 20s and 30s would have been meat and drink to me, but not now. Now I think, no, this is too much for me. So I didn't enjoy it, but I did want to have a decent meal, because where I live is a culinary wasteland. So I thought, right, I'm going to go. I'm not going to go to a Dutch restaurant because there isn't such a thing. But I went to a Basque country, northwest Spain, Basque country restaurant run by people from San Sebastian. And it looked great on the books. It looked pretty good. And they brought me, you had to have 900 grams of steak. It was myself and a friend. You have to order 900 grams of steak, and they bring it on the bone and they carve it up and slice it up on the table. I had starters of artichoke hearts wrapped in Iberico ham. I had two beers. My friend had two Coca-Colas, and that's it. Now, I got the bill, and with the tip, I'm a good tipper because I used to be a barman and a waiter. I gave a decent enough tip, 15% or something. It was 185 euros for a relatively, I mean, they weren't having, you know, desserts and all that sort of thing, or cognacs and stuff. So it was 185 euros. And I worked it out, and what's that, 3,000, just under 4,000 rand
for rand, yeah.
Good meal, but not a spectacular meal. What do you spend when you and the world's greatest rugby supporter, or you and your mates from work, when you go out, what does it cost you at a decent restaurant?
Well, if you go out to my favorite sort of restaurants, which are all dives, and mainly Portuguese dives, and we will have a glass of wine or two, and we will have starters and main course, very seldom have pudding. You're probably averaging at most 500-600 rand a person.
And we've
had prawns, and we've had peri peri chicken, and we've had chicken livers, and we've had calamari, and we've had chorizo, and we've had, so we've had a good meal probably, and two glasses of wine, say, maybe three, for 600 rand a person. So it's still quite cheap. Now, when I go out to a fancy restaurant, which isn't actually all that often, you'll do maybe 800 rand. Maybe that's a bit high. But you're 700 rand a person. I mean, I went out on Saturday night to the Turn and Tender. And the Turn and Tender is a great restaurant. I thoroughly recommend it.
Is that the one in Parktown North?
There's a few branches now.
Yeah, okay.
It started out in Rosebank, the original, I think. But no, there's quite a few Turn and Tenders now. And I had a nice 300 grand rump with some onion rings and some chippies. And I had I think it's a Bordelais sauce. My pronunciation might be wrong. But it's a very rich sauce with bone marrow and pork and onions. It was delicious.
How's your cholesterol?
Lucky enough, my cholesterol's quite good. It's quite low. Surprisingly enough, I'm quite a healthy person considering my lifestyle. I don't exercise, and I smoke, and I eat, and I'm overweight. But anyway, that's beside the point. So the steak was, I think, 240 rand. And then we had starters, that's about 130. And then we had some wine. And we actually did have some pudding. I had some delicious bread and butter pudding, which I haven't seen on the menu in forever.
I actually really like it.
Yeah,
it's great.
Oh, it's lovely. And I actually like simple puddings. I like bread and butter. I like sago. And I like rice pudding.
Okay. So what you're saying is, that was about
600 rand a person.
It's at least three times cheaper in South Africa than it is in somewhere like Amsterdam. And also Barcelona's another one that's overcrowded with tourists. Okay. Yeah. Well, I've been there a few times.
I've been to Barcelona a few times. And admittedly, the last time I was there was a long time ago. But I remember quite clearly, on European standards, the food was relatively good value.
Yes.
Price-wise. It wasn't as expensive as Paris and London and that. It was actually, and their steaks were very good. They served very nice steaks in Barcelona.
Yeah, if you find a local restaurant, a local tapas bar, and I've got two that I go to, it's very, very reasonable, and the food is superb.
Yes.
Okay, Wayne, as always, I'm now hungry again, so I've got to sort out my evening, my early supper. So thank you very much for your time. That's Wayne McCurry from FMB Wealth and Investment, portfolio manager at that institution, and that was Wayne on Wednesday. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.